Hello everyone, we're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance, we got action,
romance.
We got comedy, we got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance, what part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches, and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
Alright, so come on down to, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
My life, it used to be incomplete. Till I saw what I was looking for.
Hey, we're talking about the police for what, the second, third, fourth time?
Third time, I think, right?
Al loves this group, man.
Al's a big fan of the police.
As are we at this podcast.
Well, so hang on, because this
I'm
is
talking
interesting.
About the entity of the police.
Yes, we back the blue on this show 100%. Oh boy, I can't recover from that. No. I have really mixed feelings about the police, and I think that we talked about this when we did King of Suede.
Yes.
Like, they're a band that I have never... You know how there are bands where you're just like, I feel like I'm supposed to like this band a lot more than I do?
So the way that I see it is, I think that the police are a band where they have these hits that are just home fucking runs in my eyes. Like everything she does is magic, I think, is just like a perfect fucking song.
I would agree with that.
You know what I mean? Like, Message in a Bottle, great song. Don't
great
Stand
song.
So Close to Me, like, great song. But they're also one of those bands, and I've controversially said this before, where it's like, I love Tom Petty. I love Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers so much.
Mm-hmm.
If you only own Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers' greatest hits, that is totally fine. You have covered 90% of the songs that you probably need to know by Tom Petty. And I feel like that's how I think about the police too, is like, if you only know the big radio hits by the police, there's maybe one or two obscure tracks that like your life would, you might enjoy, but your life isn't like worse for not knowing track 9 on some random police album.
So I think I disagree with you on both of those points. First of all, Tom Petty has so many great records. I do not recommend just getting a best of. That's just me. I think Tom Petty has multiple albums that are flawless.
Don't get me wrong. I own almost every Tom Petty record and I like them. But I'm saying that like your life isn't, it's not like, how do I, like if you, this is a totally different genre of music, so it's kind of not fair, but like, if you only know Ben Folds for Brick, you're like really missing out on some like incredible songs. Like the hits from Ben Folds, I don't think even begin to cover what makes Ben Folds so good. But it's like, if you like the hits of Tom Petty, you understand why Tom Petty is
sure.
Great. I
feel you on that. I think there's a difference between the idea of like, does the hit represent the artist completely?
Yes.
Or is the hit more of an anomaly where it's you by just knowing the hit, you're missing out on a lot of what they're capable of, which would be like someone being like, oh, the Beastie Boys. Yeah, I heard Fight for Your Right to Party and it's pretty fun. And that was it. And it's like, no, there's so much more that happens.
You got to listen to Paul's Boutique. You've got
to
dive into this. Yeah.
So for Tom Petty, you're right in that his hits span enough different ideas and sounds and stuff that you get a good idea of the type of artist he was from just the hits. I'm just saying, I think there are a lot of like real incredible songs that are deep in those, like deep cuts on those records that are worth
Damn the Torpedoes is like a front to back amazing record.
Yeah,
like,
there are, he has a few records.
Into
that,
the Great Wide Open is perfect.
Yep. Like, Full Moon Fever, Wildflowers. There are a few like Tom Petty records that I think are great. But anyway, we're talking about The Police. The Police, I think you could make the same case that their hit, to me, again, like Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic, great song. King of Pain, I don't think that's a great song.
No, no.
And I could go further, and I could, again, like Message in a Bottle. Yes, that's a great song. Da-do-do-do-da-da-da. I don't think that's a great song. I feel like they are really mixed. And actually, which is what brings me to another point, which is I am trying to reconcile how I feel generally sort of meh about The Police, and yet I love this track.
I
love this track.
This song is, I mean, I can play this hand because it's two separate lists. This is such a better Police pastiche than King of Suede.
This is a better song than King of Pain.
Yeah.
Like Al has absolutely beaten The Police on this. Like, this is a better track. Like, The Police wish they had a single that was this good.
Yeah. No,
and I realized that parts of this are inspired. Like, I saw online there's like the general consensus is that this is grabbing elements of Don't Stand So Close to Me, where the intro is that like kind of like lingering low synth line that he sings over. It's very sparse.
And a little bit of Synchronicity 2 is in
and
there.
And a little bit of Synchronicity 2 in the guitar steps. Da 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 da. But this is, I think, for me, and again, I feel like it doesn't get talked about in the same way. This is as impressive a style parody as some of the ones we have talked about, like Dog Eat Dog, or like
Dare to Be Stupid,
Mr. Popeil, or Dare to Be Stupid. Like, he really, he and the band have absolutely nailed the best elements of The Police in this song.
Well, because The Police are, there's this anomaly with this band, right? Because I think that we can feel lukewarm towards The Police, but still be like, oh yeah, it is an incredibly talented trio of musicians.
Like, oh, absolutely. Like, no question about that.
Like, you've got like legitimately one of the most, I think Sting is definitely in the category of underrated bassists because people don't really see him as a bassist. But some of the bass lines in especially early Police records are fantastic.
Yeah, and he's singing and playing, which on bass is exceptionally difficult. It's not easy to do.
Yeah, one of the best drummers in rock and roll, like a dude who should be held into the same caliber as like a Geddy Lee. And like, I think with him, it's a lot of, you know, you hear the old, I learned it from The Simpsons, but the adage, the jazz isn't about what you're hearing, it's the notes that they aren't playing. And it's like to play some of the beats that he plays and it to be so simplistic in a certain sense. I remember he was on TikTok and someone asked him what is the hardest song for him to play, and his answer was kind of this like somewhat deep cut Police song, Spirits of the Material World. Like, it was a single, but it wasn't like a massive single. But his reasoning was that,
and this is Stuart Copeland you're talking about,
Stuart Copeland on TikTok.
Gotcha, okay.
And he said that it's what's hard about that song is that there's so much emptiness in it. So he has to have like, he's like, I have to have such a good internal clock of where the bits and pieces come in.
Like, yeah. I mean, the number of people I know in my world who worship the musicians of The Police, you know, it's a common thing that drummers I talk to, Stuart Copeland is a god among drummers.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, a lot of drummers. And Sting as a songwriter, Sting arguably is a songwriter more than a bass player, although I think he does get credit. He's generally, I think a lot of the songs, he is the guy who like really steers the ship completely and tell, like, this is like, I remembered hearing a while ago that he is the one who wrote the guitar lick to Message in a Bottle. That's Sting, not Andy Summers. Like, he did that. I mean, and even Andy Summers is a really weird and interesting guitarist who's very kind of avant-garde and strange in his approach
and
compared to the type of music that they make.
And they created, credit where credit's due, they definitely created a sound that stood out as the Police. And I think that's what we talk about when we say, like, they nailed the Talking Heads, they nailed the B-52s, they nailed Devo, because those are three groups that no one can sound like. No, there has never been another group that has matched the sound of a Devo or a B-52s or a Talking Heads. Like, they are all on these individual islands. And the Police constantly gets lumped into just like the general new wave 80s sound. But they are another group that no one else could do the weird fusion of like reggae, dub, almost ska music, but also with this like upbeat new wave synthesized pop sound.
No, it's true. It's very, very strange. I mean, it's a weird, it's funny. It's one of the most iconic things about their sound, but there's like an old Elvis Costello quote about the Police that always cracked me up, which is like, someone really needs to, I think I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but I'm pretty sure he said like, someone needs to smack Sting and remind him he's not from Jamaica.
Yeah.
which is a fair thing to say. Again, a funny thing where I think nowadays, if a white British man came out with a career where he was singing like that, people would be like, what are you doing right now?
So, you know, what is happening here? It's really funny. I'm not sure if you saw this conversation happening on the One Hit Thunder Facebook page, but mm-hmm. we recently did an episode on Snow in Former. Yeah. And someone asked the question of, why did Snow become a laughingstock, but no one had an issue with UB40 doing almost the exact same thing? Was it because it was like this healthy mix of all types of races in the band? And it did make me question, like, there is this element that we kind of don't talk about enough, where the UK's like reggae ska scene was so inclusive, but you did have most of those groups that came from the UK scene. It was a white singer singing in a fake Jamaican accent.
It often was. And they were inspired. It's so funny, actually, because this is totally unrelated, but yesterday when I was doing stuff around the house, I put on a record and I put on the first album by the Specials, which I hadn't heard in a long time, is this like, you know, a revolutionary album, but it was made by kids, again, of all races, who lived in a poor part of England that had a lot of Jamaican immigrants who were living there. And that was exposed them to reggae records that otherwise they had no business hearing.
Yeah.
And that started the movement. And it's really interesting of like, you know, everyone's going to have different takes on these types of things, but how sometimes appropriation in that sense is what it takes to break this thing out into the world so that people can actually hear it and then go back. And then it's wild to think that a white kid singing in England wound up being the thing that led people to Bob Marley later. Yeah,
but I mean,
but it's
you
true.
Could even,
it
you
played
could,
a part and, you could and make Sting an argument, is a part of that too.
Yeah. You could make an argument that even like for kids of our generation, mm-hmm. like how many 80s rap artists did we rediscover because Eminem blew up and was playing on alternative 100%. Radio stations, you know, like,
absolutely.
Like they were
absolutely.
Playing him on the rock stations because he was a white guy and a bunch of kids who only listened to rock music was exposed to rap for the first time in a weird, same with the Beastie Boys, who we'll talk about next week.
Exactly. Like, yeah. If you're doing it through a lens of like opening a door to a genre that you love and care about, and you're like, you're inclusive about it, I think that's, I mean, that's why, again, the Beastie Boys were really beloved for the most part from the jump. Same goes for the Specials. Yeah.
The quote, there's a quote that I love about the Beastie Boys that I read in a magazine. And it was, I'm pretty sure it was Reverend Run that told the story, but he tells the story about the very first time he played with the Beastie Boys. And he's like, we were playing in this dingy African-American bar. And he's like, it was us, Public Enemy, and the Beastie Boys. And we had the Beastie Boys going on first. And he's like, and our expectations were this club is going to hate these guys.
Yeah.
But he's like, they won the crowd over because never in the entire performance were the Beastie Boys ever trying to depict themselves as not white nerdy guys from Queens. Like, he's like, they're up there rapping about light beer and loving White Castle cheeseburgers. Mm-hmm. And like they didn't try to appropriate the elements of what people assumed was hip hop. They just liked rap music.
Yeah,
and
they were celebrating all
stuff.
The right parts of it.
Yes.
For themselves. And it's by contrast, it's the reason why, like, a while ago, someone like Iggy Azalea got in trouble And it was in large part because she, by her own admission, was like not, she, I think she said something to the effect of that she was not into like the history of rap music in America.
Yeah.
Like that was not of interest to her. And that's like, well, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like you have to, you can't take this. You can't take the parts that you like and not acknowledge like
the history.
Because that's
it.
When it feels like you are actually trying to take it for yourself and not credit. And not be inclusive about it. You're putting up a wall where you should be opening a door.
100%. You and I have talked about this, I think, when we were hanging out. But like, there's nothing that hurts me more than a person who just has zero interest in listening or watching anything that was released before they were born. Because I'm like, you're just cutting yourself out from so much interesting.
You're missing so much good stuff.
Yeah.
So much. Yeah.
Like it's upsetting.
Yeah.
So I do want to dive into the Police a little bit more, but
real quick.
Or the song Velvet Elvis, actually. But there is one other thing I would just want to bring up because you mentioned the specials, and I've been thinking about this a lot. If someone was to hypothetically cut together just a like 7-hour loop of Ghost Town by the Specials, I think I could listen to that in its entirety.
Like, I feel like we can make that happen, Matt.
That song just has such a perfect groove that like I could literally go to a Halloween party that's just that song on repeat and be totally content with the vibe of the party.
Agreed. Agreed.
Hello everyone, we're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right. So come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
So Velvet Elvis, there is some really great lyrics in this song.
There is. And so, again, not to go on another tangent right away, but I have to say, like, only in my doing research on this, and this might make me sound really dumb, it's possible, but I'm putting myself out there, I'm just being honest with you people. I did not know that the term Velvet Elvis was a thing.
So
I did not realize that was a reference to something that existed and that people knew and that this was a common thing.
Yeah. So I know that now. I probably learned that in the last 10, 15 years. As a kid, I literally thought that it was like a full-size Elvis made out of velvet, like a velvet couch. Like, oh, this is a velvet Elvis. It's like a dummy that you would put in your house. I mean, it's literally talking about it being a painting. I just was not paying attention to the lyrics as a kid. But
I don't know why, for some reason, in my head, I didn't picture a painting. I pictured like a statue.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like a statue of Elvis that was made out of velvet. Like is.
Yeah, but that makes no sense. I don't know
zero
why
sense.
My
He's
kid
making
brain
references
went
to
there.
Van Gogh and Rembrandt.
Yeah, exactly. It's very clear. And for some reason, I'm glad that you said that, Matt, because I was just like, when I was looking at the lyrics for this, I was like, what made me think this was something else?
I think
maybe
it's just
because
we're kids
velvet,
and we're dumb.
Like, yeah, I guess I'm just a dumb kid. I guess that's probably what it is.
But yeah, the Velvet Elvis paintings. I think I actually learned about the existence of a Velvet Elvis painting.
Velvet Elvis.
I'm sure that there was like jokes about it in like a Mad magazine or something where they like depicted someone as being a loser and had like a Velvet Elvis painting on their wall. Like, you know how they'd have like that pic? They would do those things in Mad magazine where it'd just be like a picture with a bunch of arrows pointing to stuff and it'd be like signs of blah, 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 blah. I'm sure one of them said Velvet Elvis, and that's when I was like, oh, that's what that Weird Al song is about.
Yeah.
But this was my first introduction to that phrase. I had never heard of that phrase.
Did you know, like, if there is a Wikipedia entry for Velvet Elvis that covers how many, like, there are so many songs that have been written about Velvet Elvis. Like, I swear to God, there are, even with the same title as this, like 10?
That's insane.
All the way up to as recent as, like, Casey Musgraves did a Velvet Elvis song very recently. I am shook. I just did not know this was such, this was enough of a phenomenon that this many people have touched on it. It blows my mind.
Yeah. Wow. Sister Hazel. I'm looking at the list now.
Yeah. Sister Hazel, the Stray Cats.
That's insane.
It's crazy.
It's in video games. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I am. Oh, shit. Velvet Elvis, Repainting Christian Faith is the book. I don't even have that book. And I love Rob Bell.
I mean, this is bizarre. And there's a picture here of the a Velvet Elvis style painting, which, you know, we can share with people. But it is, you know, again, just a great example of, I guess, coming to this later and not having lived through this. Like, this must have been a real cultural moment, either at a time or place that I was not aware of.
So can we talk about what I think is one of the best lines in this entire album? It's no Womb with a View, but check out those sideburns. There's nothing greater. You can tell that he's no Velvet Elvis impersonator. Oh my
so God. Good.
Like, that is such a good line.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, and most of the lyrics of this song are just this funny. Like, it's so, like, and it has a darkness to it that the Police songs often have. Like, it's both, like, light on its feet and, like, peppy and upbeat, especially at the end. It kind of busts into this major, you know, major key, happy vibe, the final Velvet Elvis refrains. But it's like a dark song. It feels dark musically, you know, about something super, super silly and weird. And I love when Al does these songs that are about, like, this is really, like, I guess about, like, a quirk. This feels very American to me. I mean, it's the fact that it's being about all about Elvis certainly doesn't hurt that. But even just the weird, quirky nature of the collectible, obsessive, I gotta have it.
Well, this falls
mentality.
This falls into, I'm trying to think if there's examples of this yet, but a lot of Al's food songs, right? I Love Rocky Road, My Bologna,
yeah.
Addicted to Spuds. They're all these songs about celebrating the mundane. I feel like this is one of the earlier examples of him doing it, but not about food. Like,
correct.
Focusing on something else that is, yeah, like, super mundane. Because, like, I think that the most, the you're talking about the darkest part of this thing. Like, if this was a movie, let's say we made a movie based on this song.
Okay.
Right? It's that bridge where he's like, it's my own private Graceland. I don't need anything. I don't need lava lamps. Like, this is like that point in a horror movie where
this
would
be an A24 for sure.
Yeah, where it's just like, this person is so obsessed with this one thing in their house that, like, they're killing people who touch it.
Yeah, it's almost life ruining how much he loves this thing. Yeah, and again, you're sort of extrapolating that from the sentiment a little bit, like, or the lyrics here, but even at the end, I'm just actually now noticing the final verse is in my own private Graceland, in my own little shrine to the king, I don't want nothing else and I don't need anything. And then he lists some things that presumably were also of the culture at that time.
Yeah, the dog's
don't need
poker.
No lava lamp, don't need no soap on a rope, no pictures of Mexican kids with those really big eyes, or dogs playing poker. Now, all four of those references I get.
Yeah.
It's weird to me that the Velvet Elvis is the one that I didn't. And maybe it was even then a more obscure and less obvious one, which is why he did the song about it.
I also like the line that comes right after that, because there is, again, this dark sadness to it. When I'm at home watching TV, the king is always looking down at me.
Yeah. Like, he looks, like, so handsome. He stands so tall. So glad he's big enough to cover up the hole in the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a dark, I don't know. Again, maybe I'm putting too much into it, but this feels like a tragedy. This song.
But I think that there is, that line specifically, the king is always looking down on me. Like, if you took that lyric out of context, right, and you just said, what do you think the lyric, the king is always looking down on me, is about? Someone's going to be like, oh, it's a song about, like, being a peasant and being repressed and being like
or
I don't think.
Or
that,
religious.
Yeah.
I mean, it has very religious tones. Like, he is worshiping this painting.
Like, I don't think that that's accidental. For what we know about Al, he doesn't, like, accidentally stumble into something that has a double meaning to it.
Yeah.
And just, you know, going into, like, the final chorus where they're yelling Velvet Elvis and he's adding in his little ad libs or whatever, where it's like he never ages. He's never going to put on weight.
He never,
like,
puts on weight, yeah.
Like, it's, I could see, we have to write to Al, obviously, in another 20 years when he decides to make his third feature film. I think it should be an A24 horror film about a man's obsession with a Velvet Elvis painting.
Honestly, I mean, the more that we talk about it, the more this feels like a great idea. Although, funny enough, I also found, this was also on Al's, like, an old Q&A he did. Someone asked him a question, noting that there was a club in Houston, Texas, that named itself Velvet Elvis and got sued by Elvis's estate. And this person asked if Al had any issue with the song, and Al says, no, I met Priscilla once or twice while doing the Naked Gun movies, and she never tried to subpoena me or anything. So I guess it was fine, but I mean, it's the point being that the Elvis estate, who knows, having to go through them to get this movie greenlit might be a challenge. We're gonna have to get our legal team on it. Right. I'm sure A24 is set up for this whole kind
they
of
got
thing.
The
no
pockets,
problem.
Whatever.
Oh, they'll be fine. They'll
be fine. They just made that movie Elvis. Like,
that's true. That's true. Although I know that was, again, done, like, with the family's approval completely. Otherwise, they wouldn't have gotten made.
That's fair. All right.
Yeah.
All right. You ready to rank this bad boy?
I think so. Yeah. The thing I kept coming back to that I wrote down as we were listening to this is just, like, I like this song too much to not like The Police, which is in my head. I feel like I don't love The Police and I like this too much for that to be true. So I think I have to take a fresh look at them following this episode and see what I've been missing. Maybe I'm going to become a Police fan at this point. It's never too late. Another shout out to, cause it's very inspired by Andy Summers, but the guitar solo in the middle of this song is so good.
Yes.
It is this weird ambient, like, very sparse, very little is going on. And it's just these, like, textures that kind of swirl around the stereo if you have headphones on. Oh my God. Excellent, excellent, excellent solo. Like, this is just a great track. I know they've been doing this song a lot on the Vanity tours.
Well,
as a live staple, like, this has come up a bunch.
Should we talk about your keyboard player?
Yes. Thank you. Brandon, the keyboard player for Wheatus, went to go. Hi, Brandy. Hello, Brandy. He listens to the show. And because he listens to this show, he went to see Weird Al play at Graceland because he lives in Memphis. And he saw Al play at Graceland. And Al, I think he said, opened with this track, because of course he did. How can you not open with Velvet Elvis in Graceland? And I also think that he did an Elvis cover in the encore. Maybe it was Blue Suede Shoes. I can't remember, but
I don't know why, but in my heart, I want to hear Al sing Burn in Love. So I'm just going to tell myself that that's what he did.
but he did do that there. And presumably, from what I heard, I absolutely brought the house down. With his Velvet Elvis tribute. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He did. I just looked it up. He sang Viva Las Vegas.
I mean, also a great one. I still say Al should do Burn in Love. I think that I could hear him doing that honka honka burn in love. Like, the band's
Al,
like, playing it faster.
Al, if you're listening,
faster.
It's not too late. Get on it. Get on it.
Next Graceland show. We'll fly out there just to hear
you play
Burn in Love.
Oh, we'll go. Put us on the guest list and we will be there. You're welcome. Okay, yes. No, now I feel like I'm ready to rank this song.
Okay.
I really do like this one a lot. And I'm going to rank it higher than I expected to. But I'm just I'm putting this in between Christmas at Ground Zero and This Is the Life.
All right. I also am going to rank this higher than I was planning to. I said something in the Vanna White episode where I was like, I think it's this or another song that's kind of my least favorite original. Mm-hmm. This was the song I was referencing to at the time. Mm. Sitting down and listening to it this time, like, oh no, Stuck in a Closet with Vanna White is definitely my least favorite of the originals on this album. Velvet Elvis, again, I think there's going to be a pretty big cluster for me. ultimately with even worse with a lot of these. And this is nothing. This is, again, one of those things. I'm putting it in between Mr. Popeil and Mr. Frump in the Iron Lung. And
ooh,
that
three misters.
Yeah, and that's a little bit that's a little bit lower than where you have it.
Just a little bit.
But again, I think you'd feel the same way. This is not even like an indictment against this song. It is just that the songs that we have above it, there's a big piece of nostalgic, overwhelming love for it. In all honesty, I almost part of me is like, man, I almost want to move Slime Creatures down a bit because
I was thinking, I wonder if we should set up a moment for ourselves where we can like, do we give ourselves a chance?
I say at the turn of each decade of Al albums, we can rearrange a little bit.
We can do a rearrange? Okay.
Yeah, so,
all right.
So after UHF, before Off the Deep End, we'll do
at the turn of the decade. I like that. That's a good that's a good way to break it down. Because we don't want to do it too much. There's something about picking
We'll work out the rules, but like there might have to be like you can only move five songs or something.
Yeah,
you know,
there'll be a limit. We're gonna work out the rules. If you guys have suggestions for rules,
because nothing's more fun
send them.
Than
we
a podcast
love,
with rules.
We love a tremendous amount of rules on this show. As again, we love the police, and as a result, we want rules. So hit us with rules on Facebook or Instagram and let us know what you think a good way to rearrange is. And if you don't care and we can do whatever we want, then maybe we'll do that. But I think a couple things could move a little bit. Maybe I like the idea of like we can move something, but only like one spot.
Yeah.
Like you can't move something from number 15 to number 5.
Yeah.
It's got to be like one position up or down, and it's very calculated moves. Something like that. I don't know.
Like the game Risk. A lot of strategery.
Just like the game. Risk led to so many fights in my house growing up. Like I can't even. That was too tough, Risk.
That's probably.
I had some family members who really struggled with that game.
It's probably top 5 board games for me.
I think it's good fun, but it's a lot of tears, a lot of crying.
Lost some good ones.
A lot of crying.
to the game
At least
of
one time where the board got pushed and all the pieces fell off and it was like, well, that's that.
Hello, everyone. We're Superhero Stuff You Should Know. And if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right, so come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.